Revelation 13:11, and I saw another beast coming up out of the earth, and it had two horns like a lamb, and he spoke like a dragon. We're going to deal with this prophecy in detail in another lecture. It exercises all the authority of the first beast, which we will find will be Roman Catholicism before it, and causes the earth and those that dwell in it to worship the first beast whose deadly wound was healed. So here was now a Protestant ally that would enforce papal doctrines. But that's in another lecture, complete lecture, called Two Beasts Become Friends. If we look at the architecture even, it is interesting. That is St. Peter's. That is the Capitol building. The architecture is identical. Of course, the building itself was designed, the American one, by Freemasonry. And Freemasonry is in control by whom? The Jesuit order. Now let's have a look at some of the symbolism over there and some of the interesting issues. We are now ready for the Second World War, and the three main role players of the Allies are this man over here, Winston Churchill, and he was a what? 33-degree Freemason. We saw Roosevelt in his full Masonic regalia. He was a 32 or 33-degree Freemason. And then we have Stalin, who was, of course, Grand Orient member, so 33-degree Freemason. They're all on one side. Extract from a report by Ambassador Harriman in Moscow to the State Department, June 30, 1944. Stalin paid tribute to the assistance rendered by the United States to Soviet industry before and during the war. He said that about two-thirds of all the large industrial enterprises in the Soviet Union had been built with United States help or technical assistance. The other third had been Britain. So who built the the USSR? Who built it? The West. The West financed it and built it. Here you can see Winston Churchill in his Drood Masonic Lodge with all his Drood fellows around him. So these are genuine facts. This isn't just conjecture. What about the other side? Hitler. Hitler said, "I learned much from the order of the Jesuits. Until now, there has never been anything more grandiose on earth than the hierarchical system of the Catholic Church. I transferred much of this organization into my own party. The SS was constituted according to the Jesuit principles. Himmler, head of the SS, was closely associated with the Jesuits through his father and brother. Hitler said of him, I can see Himmler as our Ignatius of Loyola. And Joseph Goebbels was also a trained Jesuit." So, the two sides, who controls them both? The same parties. This is called thesis, antithesis. Goebbels, Himmler, these people were Jesuits. They were fascists. Adolf Hitler, fascist, using the symbolism of the sun god, the Maltese cross, the symbols of the sun god. Here he is with Hindenburg himself, of course, the Freemason. This thing is all entirely planned. Gaining the youth on his side. One of the principal Catholic personalities to help Hitler to power was Franz von Papen. And Franz von Papen, of course, leader of the Catholic Party, helped to skyrocket Hitler to power. So the Catholic Church skyrocketed Hitler to power. And these are posed pictures. They have Masonic meaning, but we'll get to that later. The Reichsadler, chosen as the symbol, Masonic symbol. And the supposed happy alliance in the beginning, which then deteriorates. Here you see the salute with the Masonic activities associated with it. Here he is together with the church leaders. And here you can see the cardinals giving the Heil Hitler salute. So the church was very much involved with the Nazi movement. There is a bunch of cardinals giving the Heil Hitler salute. The Pope and the Führer, you will recall that even to this day there is tremendous anger about Pope Pius having now been declared on his way to sainthood because of his connection with the Nazi movement. Well, here is the new Reichsbischof Ludwig Müller, the Protestant one who greets Adolf Hitler with a nice handshake. The previous one, the previous Protestant bishop, no longer lived because Adolf Hitler had him executed. So this one must have been a puppet on the religious side. So the Catholics and the Protestants next to each other. Now understand the war. Let's think about the war. Who is the problem in terms of the Roman Catholic Church? Firstly, the Orthodox Church in the East had been a problem. The First World War sorted that out. The Tsar had been removed, and the Orthodox Church had been subjected, as were all the churches, to make it look right, by atheistic communism. But the leaders of communism were all Catholics. In fact, I have traveled in many of those countries, and the people, the old people, all told me, now we understand why the leaders of the communist regimes, why they all attended the Catholic Church. Why, if they were all atheists, were they such good Catholics? Well, this mighty army is built up, but Germany is divided. The north of Germany, and particularly the east of Germany, is all Protestant. They're Lutherans. And they are skeptical of the papacy. Whereas the south of Germany is all Catholic. In the Orthodox countries, like the entire USSR, you have the Orthodox Church controlling the mindset of the people. Now, since the takeover of communism, that has been reduced or subjected, and the Orthodox Church has been subject to the state. Now comes this mighty war. The symbols being carried here are the symbols of Lucifer. They're also used in theosophy. There you can see them. There's the swastika, the all-seeing serpent. And Adolf Hitler himself was a tremendous occultist. Of course, as a Jesuit insider, he would be. But of course, his outer garb of religion was Catholicism. You'll find the same swastika on the foot of Buddha. And, as I recall, as I told you before, it was a Jesuit priest, Father Stempfler, not Hitler, who really wrote Mein Kampf. So, a Jesuit wrote the book. The SS has the same symbols as the Skull and Bones people. The skull with the crossbone, meine Ehre, heißt Treue. My honor means Treue, to be loyal, loyalty. The SS had been organized by Himmler according to the principle of the Jesuit order and became basically the new, if you like, Inquisition. And anybody who did not obey the system was destroyed. Now, we read much in the literature about 6 million Jews who were destroyed. But we read nothing about 2.5 million of the most brilliant people in Germany, all the professors, all the intelligent, highly educated Germans who were killed by Adolf Hitler. You see, thinking people cannot be tolerated in such a regime. Downgrade the mindset. We must have serfs and elite. Goyen, catechumens, cattle, and then the super illuminists. How irritating. Remember that the Jesuit magazine, Civiltà Cattolica, house organ of the Jesuits, says quite frankly, fascism is the regime that corresponds most closely to the concept of the Church of Rome. Fascism is fascinating, excuse the pun. Fascism has one central leader. You see, Pope eventually, one central leader, total control over the people, yet the people believe that they are free because they are getting everything that they require. Unlike communism, they may have property rights, but the property rights are qualified, and I'll come to that in a later lecture in case you are duped into that. Now here are these fasciae. Let's have a look at them. A bundle of rod accompanied by an axe or a spear, which symbolized power over life and death, carried by the Roman official as symbol of authority. Under the Republican conflict or praetor, starting on an expedition, he took his vows on the Capitoline Hill, where the Vatican sits today. This is very symbolic. He is acclaimed imperator, in other words, leader by his troops. He decked his fasci with a laurel and on his return deposited the wreath upon the Capitoline Hill. Everything leads to Rome. Fascinating story. So where you find the fascii, you must know that Rome is behind it. Fascist regimes use the fascii. So fascii can look like that with an axe, or the axe can go through, or it can be a spear like it was in the French Revolution. These are fascii. Now, where do we find the fascii? Well, in 1888, campaign poster of the incumbent president Grover Cleveland, Benjamin Harrison defeated them, but later he won. Cleveland was re-elected to a non-consecutive term. There he is. Eagle is standing on two fascii. See it? Fascism, hidden in the United States. Do you know the United States should be as far as the East is from the West from fascism, isn't it? Well, isn't that fascinating? The U.S. Capitol building, if you go right to the tippy-toppy, that's what you have. Fascii. So the United States eventually is going to become a fascist state. Nobody would have believed that 50 years, 100 years ago, 10 years ago, maybe not even 5 years ago. Today, what does it look like? Is there mighty state control over every single one, just like in the times of the SS? If you move, is there a new law coming out which will watch the people of the state, yes or no? Yes, Patriot Bill, have you heard of that? All kinds of interesting laws coming out. Now, what type of government is that? Interesting. There it is. Did you know that the fascii here, fascii behind the rostrum podium of the House of Representatives in Washington, D.C., note the back of the chair resembles a golden axe. There it is, the axe and the fascii. So they knew this all along. They're just waiting for the opportunity, biding their time. Ancient Roman coins with a fascii. Here is a fascia on the back of a dime in America with a flame there. Fascia on a U.S. dollar. And presidents sitting next to fascia is Washington. Even Abraham Lincoln sat on a fascia chair. Here's the insignia of the National Guard. It has fascia. There are fascia in the Statue of Liberty. Let's read what Anthony Sutton, remember this man who wrote about Skull and Bones, educated at the University of London, Gottingham, California, research fellow, Hoover Institute. This is an important man. Let's see what he has to say. How the Order Creates War and Revolution. Talking now about Skull and Bones, which is the Illuminati, which is the Jesuits behind the scenes, as we have seen. Operational history of the Order can only be understood within the framework of Hegelian dialectic process. Hegel, the great man who said, always create two directions, thesis, antithesis, rub them up against the other. Who cares how many people die in the process? Then you have synthesis. Then you get what you actually want. From this axiom, it follows that controlled conflict can create a predetermined history. For example, when the Trilateral Commission to subject managed conflict, etc. We read this quote before, so I'll just skip it. The synthesis, that's which comes together, sought by the establishment is called the New World Order. Without controlled conflict, this New World Order will not come about. Random individual action of persons in society would not lead to the synthesis. It's artificial. Therefore, it has to be created. So you hear about a war here and a war there and a revolution here and a revolution there. Revolutions have to be financed. You never hear where the money comes from to finance them. Who finances the revolutions? Who runs them? You see? So you have Nazis against Soviet Unions, North Korea, North Vietnam, ad nauseam against the United States. The conflict built profits while pushing the world ever closer to a one-world government. Now, isn't it logical that that's what Satan wants? He wants a one-world government. So, in Hegelian philosophy, the conflict of political right and political left, or thesis and antithesis in Hegelian terms is essential to forward movement of history and historical change itself. Have you noticed that every country has a left party and a right party? Have you heard about that? And your country has it too, otherwise there would be no point to vote, right? Two of them. Now, let's have a look how this is worked. President Woodrow Wilson made this statement. This is now president speaking. Some of the biggest men in the United States in the fields of commerce and manufacturing know that there is a power so organized, so subtle, so complete, so pervasive that they had better not speak above their breath when they speak in condemnation of it. Aha! So here is the power that controls things. Karl Marx in Das Kapital posed capitalism as thesis and communism as antithesis. Now you'll have Jesuits clamoring for capitalism and you'll have Jesuits clamoring for communism. The clash of opposites must, in the Hegelian system, bring about a society neither capitalist nor communist. That's synthesis. Moreover, in the Hegelian scheme of events, this new synthesis will reflect the concept of the state as God and the individually as totally subordinate to an all-powerful state. If you don't do what the state says, civil fits. That's what Adolf Hitler practiced. 2.5 million Germans, civil fits, gone. What then is the function of parliament? Now take note, I'm not saying this, I'm reading it. I get criticized for this statement, you cannot believe. Please don't criticize me, write to these people. I'm just quoting. What then is the function of a parliament, a congress, for Hegelians? These institutions are merely to allow individuals to feel that their opinions have some value, and to allow a government to take advantage of whatever wisdom the peasant may accidentally demonstrate. All right? Now let's see how Hegel puts it himself. This is now the great philosopher Hegel, where the politicians bow down to him. He says, by virtue of this participation, subjective liberty and conceit with their general opinion, individuals, can show themselves palpably efficacious and enjoy the satisfaction of feeling themselves to count for something. In other words, we're just idiots. So if you vote, who are you voting for? I'll tell you who you're voting for. I always say this. They vote for the devil in pink or the devil in blue. The vote makes no difference. It's a joke. Politics is a joke. War, the organized conflict of nations for Hegelianism, is only the visible outcome of the clash between ideas. As John Dewey, the Hegelian darling of modern education system, puts it, he's in control of the whole new world education. War is the most effective preacher of the vanity of all merely finite interests. It puts an end to the selfish egoism of the individual by which he would claim his life and his property as his own or as his family's. Did you get that? Now, surely Rome doesn't think like that. Oh, I'll show you papal bulls which will make your hair stand on end. New ones. Compare this to the spirit and letter of the Constitution of the United States, which says absolutely the opposite. All right? So for these elitists, the state is supreme, and a self-appointed elite running the state acts indeed as God on earth. The rest are catechumens, cattle, goyim. College textbooks present war and revolution as more or less accidental results of conflict. But they never, never in Western textbooks will you find the evidence that revolutions need finance, and the source of the finance, in many cases, traces back to Wall Street. Operational vehicles for conflict creation, the key to modern history is in these facts. The elitists have close working relations with both Marxists and Nazis. They play on both sides because what they have created is just a game. In this memorandum, we will present the concept that world history, certainly since 1970, reflects deliberately created conflict with the objective of bringing about a synthesis, a new world order. So let's have a look how it works. Here's the order. The thesis is Marxist Russia, Second World War now. The antithesis, Nazi Germany. Who financed them? Who financed the Russians. Guarantee Trust Company. Who financed the Nazis? Guarantee Trust Company. And then you have Harriman, formerly of Harriman and Company, etc., etc. Same people over here. Harriman, Nazi interests. Same people finance both sides. Then you have the Bolshevik Revolution, 1917 and 1933. Hitler's ascension to power. Conflict between the two. Tremendous profit. And the result, post-World War II, United Nations as the first step to a new world order. There you have it. Beautifully. Financed by the same side. By 1948, the atomic race. By 1950, Mary receives pilgrim status. 1950, Francis Matthew calls for nuclear war with Russia, and they start arguing between the two of them. Notice how many were killed by Stalin. Among the 1,766,188 victims up to the beginning of 1922, figures obtained from the Soviet documents, nearly 5,000 were priests, teachers, nuns, etc. of the Greek church. As soon as the persecution extended to the millions of Lutheran, Reformed, Baptist, Methodist, and especially Mennonite Christians, the circulation of the Bible is not only strictly forbidden, but punishable by exile. So that's what Stalin did. Stalin killed millions. We hear of 6 million Jews. Well, think in terms of 30, 40, 50 million people when you think of Stalin, the greatest mass murderer this world has ever seen. And Foster Dulles, President Kennedy, what is the story there? Well, here is Kennedy, and he's married to this young lady, Jacqueline Kennedy, and they are setting up the United States for a tremendous conflict in the end, and every president has to play the game. Eventually, this president dies, and this one takes over, Lyndon Johnson. But did you know something interesting? A president has to swear on the Bible when he takes over. Did you know that Lyndon Johnson refused to swear on the Bible? What did he swear on? Lyndon Johnson is sworn in as president by Judge Sarah D. Hughes. Just hour after the assassination, Judge Hughes brought a small Bible for the swearing-in ceremony, but it was substituted for a Roman Missal mass book that was found on the plane. So he swears on a Roman Missal, he refused to swear on the Bible. Doesn't that tell you something? Isn't that interesting? I find that very interesting. Now why did that president have to go? He was a Roman Catholic after all. Is it possible that not all Roman Catholics are so easily duped? Here's the motorcade as it travels along. Here you have Mrs. Kennedy helps the Secret Service agent, Clint Hill, climb into the car at the back when the president was shot. And here are the roses she received. Very interesting. Here is Dallas, 11:22. On November 22, 1963, John Fitzgerald Kennedy, 35th President of the United States, visited Dallas. That's interesting. Also the number 11 over there. That's the building. Here's the building from which he was apparently assassinated, from that window, so they say. There it is, a little bit larger. And here's the plaque where they have written what happened over here. On November 22, the building gained the national notoriety when Lee Harvey Oswald, and somebody did the trouble to underline allegedly, shot and killed President John F. Kennedy. And most people don't believe that Lee Harvey Oswald shot the president. The president's car came down the street. That tree was not yet there and was apparently shot from that window over there. And it happened approximately where I'm standing relative to this picture. Now notice as he comes down here, he's traveling on this side of the road. And imagine hordes of people standing on either side. And here is a little uphill. And when you go further into the hall over here, there was a picket fence. And if you looked from the picket fence, you could look down onto the street. And apparently, when the shots were fired, over 100 people, including the police, didn't run this way, but ran up this embankment towards the picket fence. Now, why did they run to the front of the president and not from behind the president? Apparently, they say, Lee Harvey Oswald shot him from behind, and he was the only one who shot, and he shot from behind, and he hit him over here. A very, very fantastic shot, by the way, if it is so. He only has a little problem. The president's head didn't go forward, it went backwards, and it hit him here in the throat. And there was a small entry wound in the front and a huge one in the back. So from where was he hit? From the front or from the back? He was hit from the front. Not only that, there were shots from other places along the side, and there was an intercalation which all hit the president. There is even evidence that the driver himself, who happened to be left-handed, rotated and shot the president himself with a pistol as well. He had multiple shots. Of the witnesses that ran towards the picket fence, over 100 of them, almost all of them, except for one or two ladies who were ridiculed, were assassinated themselves. Is that not strange? Wouldn't you think that was strange if all the witnesses died strangely? Well, this is one of the biggest cover-ups that probably ever occurred. Here's the picket fence. And when you're looking there, that's how it was. Someone behind the picket fence would shoot. And this would be the view from the picket fence. I'm now pretending to be there. I took these pictures myself. And the cross would be there. So he would shoot the president at this short distance and hit him from the side front. Now, it's interesting that the president's head jerked to his back and to his left. Bah! Like that. That means that he must have been shot from the front side. Right? Isn't that logical? Alright, now, am I saying this or is this public knowledge? This is public knowledge. And yet it is denied by government because they have one culprit, Lee Harvey Oswald. There's the place where he died, straight shot from the picket fence. Now, let's have a look how J.F. Kennedy died.
Let's go back to that day in Dallas. The day was November 22nd, the time shortly before noon. At first, the crowds were thick, but as the motorcade approached Dealey Plaza, it was here that the motorcade violated the Secret Service's own rules. As the car turned, it slowed from 40 miles an hour to 70. It was precisely then that gunshots blasted out. For 6 seconds, the occupants of Kennedy's car were struck by bullets. Kennedy grasped for his throat. Kennedy's head exploded, driven with great force backwards and to the left. Then and only then did the president's car accelerate and speed off. Lyndon Johnson, the new president, ordered a federal commission to investigate the crime. The Warren Commission had given us the official version. Lee Harvey Oswald had acted alone. But if all three shots had come from behind, then why did the president's head fly backwards? And why did so many people, including policemen, run not towards the book depository where Oswald was, but towards the picket fence? If the Warren Commission was right, why did so many witnesses claim to see something completely different from the official report? As many as 177 people died simply from knowing too much. The moment Kennedy was killed, a massive cover-up went into operation. Witnesses were threatened, and many were killed.
Ian Harold interviewed immediately afterwards.
Shots rang out, and he grabbed his chest. There was an interval, and then three or four more shots rang out. By that time, the motorcade sped away.
With us now is Gene Hill, who's closer to the president's car than anyone else at the time of the shooting. Ms. Hill is a Dallas grade school teacher, and has feared for her life for the last 29 years. I understand that two men claiming to be Secret Service agents interrogated you after the assassination. What were you asked?
They asked me what I had seen. I told them that I'd seen the president hit, that I saw a shooter from the knoll, and that I'd heard 4 to 6 shots. But they told me I didn't hear but 3 shots.
Were you ever interviewed by the Warren Commission?
Oh, yes. I was interviewed by our inspector, who, he tried very hard to discredit everything I said. He accused me of all kinds of things, from like a shabby marital affair to seeking publicity to just downright lying.
we found the real facts, and certainly no one in the intervening 25 years has disproved our basic conclusions.
It was Spector who came up with the so-called magic bullet theory, which tracks one bullet going through both Kennedy and Texas Governor John Connally. The bullet was later discovered virtually intact on Connally's hospital stretcher.
The truth had been known, had it come out, was revealed. There was a conspiracy. Conspiracy to kill the president needed a scapegoat, a pastor, someone who would take the blame. There were many things you weren't supposed to see, like the paraffin test given to Oswald. It proved conclusively that Oswald had not fired a rifle that day, or the spy camera found in Oswald's possessions, issued to him by the U.S. government, or Oswald's letter to a Mr. Hunt requesting his next assignment. The only Hunt we know of in this case is Howard Hunt of the CIA, who shared the same office with Oswald in New Orleans. The office belonged to Guy Bannister, foreman with the FBI. Not only was this address on Oswald's supposedly pro-Castro leaflets, but the account Oswald used to print the leaflets belonged to the CIA. Howard Hunt with the CIA, Guy Bannister with the FBI, and Lee Harvey Oswald, all in the same office. Kennedy's motorcade was arranged to make two turns, taking him directly into a triangulation. The first shot came from the picket fence. It hit Kennedy in the throat. The second shot came from the Dowell text building next to the book depository. It ended in Kennedy's back. The third shot came from the southwest corner of the book depository, seventh floor. It hit Conley. The fourth shot came from the Dowell text. It narrowly missed, hit the curb, wounding a bystander. The fifth and sixth shots were fired almost simultaneously from the depository and from the picket fence. Both hit Kennedy in the head, one from above, moving him forward. Then, an instant later, one from the front, tossing him back.
Here you see the passenger in the front turning back, looking at the president. Instead of jumping back to the system, he turns forward. The driver's now rotating. Weapon comes into view and he fires. You'll see this repeatedly in these sequences. Kennedy's been shot in the throat. He's leaning to his left. The driver now begins to rotate. His left arm comes over his right shoulder and he fires now. Again, you see the driver rotate. You see the weapon come into view. He's rotating again. The weapon is in view. He fires. You can clearly see his head turning and his arm and the weapon extending into view over his right shoulder.
One of the first activities of William Greer after the presidential limousine arrived at Parkland Hospital was to attain a bucket and a sponge and water and begin to wash the blood and brains off of the presidential limousine.
This new theory about the assassination of John F. Kennedy, a government scientist says police audio tapes provide new evidence of a second gunman.
If it could be proved that the sound on the tape was a gunshot and that, in fact, it came from the grassy knoll, then it would provide some evidence that there was a second gunman in addition to Lee Harvey Oswald. But so far, few who agree with the conclusion made by Thomas.
Hello?
Yes, Rick. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I'd like to know why it's taken so long for this information and the truth to be exposed.
In the first place, it hasn't been exposed yet, and I don't think it ever will be. Secrecy in government is designed for one purpose and one purpose only. Not to keep the enemy or the opposition from knowing what's going on, but to keep the American people from knowing what is going on. And all the evidence that exists or might have existed that would implicate the government in Kennedy's assassination, you can be sure that evidence is now destroyed. So even if everything is released now, the chances of solving the Kennedy assassination and attaching the blame to the guilty parties is almost impossible.
Kennedy was changing the status quo. He decided he could no longer trust the CIA.
He was transferring covert operations directly to the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Shortly after that, he fired Alan Dulles, who had been the director of Central Intelligence since 1953.
Kennedy continued to make enemies as he pulled back from world confrontation. who ordered U.S. troops out of Vietnam.
This was an incident that took place.
Well, you saw that driver rotate, if you could see it. It was very difficult. You could see his head go back. You could see all these things. Vatican Assassin says, but after the failure of the Bay of Pigs invasion, President Kennedy changed due to his betrayal by the Jesuit Council of Foreign Relations in the person of McGeorge Bundy. He sought to break the CIA into 1,000 pieces. Now, the CIA would be like the SS. Why break that? Then he called for a return to America's currency to the gold standard. That was a major problem that would stop the Federal Reserve. And another thing that he said, I will separate church and state. I think that was a big mistake that he made in the eyes of the Jesuits. Remember that Loyola said, finally let all with such artfulness gain the ascendant over princes, noblemen, and magistrates of every place, that they may be ready at our beck even to sacrifice their nearest relations and most intimate friends when we say it is for our interest and advantage. That's fascinating. We know, of course, that Jacqueline Kennedy was raised in a Jesuit convent. But let's leave it there. One of Nixon's main speech writers during 3 whole years was Jesuit father, the Reverend John McLaughlin, who wrote Nixon's speeches at a salary of $32,000 a year, which was a lot of money at that time. And the next president, one of the next ones, Gerald Ford, there's his own signature, 33-degree Freemason. I took this picture myself in the Masonic Lodge. There he signs it, 33-degree Freemason. These people are not who they say they are. And when we look at him, and we look at these handshakes that they have, and the holy alliance between the papacy and the United States of America, this is, by the way, a signal picture, and Reagan appointed this man to be a representative to the Vatican. So by 1987, Pope John Paul visits the United States. President Reagan meets him and he says, as you exhort us, we will listen. This is not separation of church and state. For with all our hearts we yearn to make this good land better still. The Pope is quoted as saying, I come as a friend of America and of all Americans, Catholics, Orthodox, Jews, all men of goodwill. Well, interesting. Here he is together. This, by the way, also a Masonic signal picture, but we won't go into the details. That's also a Masonic signal picture. We won't go into those details. How do they plan their trips? Let's ask them. Here's Ronald Reagan planning his trip to this president of Russia.
Then in September, Gorbachev proposed a pre-summit meeting in Reykjavik, Iceland. Washington agreed. The astrologer fixed the time and the date of departure, and at 9:45 on October the 9th, Reagan flew to Reykjavik.
For instance, if you have very bad Saturn, you should cultivate Jupiter so that...
Wow! He's now acting like Nebuchadnezzar. Let's call the astrologers to tell us when this meeting should take place. You know, the 11th is a very important date. Presidents die on it. Buildings collapse on it. It's very interesting. My Pope... Pope Paul II, I confirm for you as the Pope of my secret, the Pope about whom I spoke to the children during the apparitions, the Pope of my love and my sorrow. This is what Mary apparently said to the children at Fatima. This is the Pope of the secret, or this is the Mary predicted that he would have an assassination, this Pope, and the modern channels through Father Gobi say that this is the Pope of the promise. Well, Malachi Martin, in The Keys of This Blood, this is a pontifical work, right, for a new world order had begun. And Pope John Paul would stride now in the arena of the millennium endgame as something more than a geopolitical giant of his age. He was and remains the serene and confident servant of the grand design. There's another Masonic language. He's going to be the head honcho, the main man. All this bloodshed, all these wars. In Germany, what happened? What did the war do in Germany, the Second World War? In Germany, the north of Germany was devastated. It was firebombed, which was illegal according to all conventions. They threw firebombs on the north of Germany. Hamburg was gutted by firebombs. Now, firebombs don't just destroy military targets. What do they destroy? They burn human beings alive. So it was targeted to destroy the people. And then East Germany, the entire Protestant conclave was cut out and handed over to Soviet Russia for two generations of enforced atheism. Today there's no Protestant left anymore. Protestantism has been destroyed. The Orthodox Church has been subjugated. All of them are subject to Rome. Millions of Serbians died. Millions. It has been a slaughter in the last centuries such as this world has not seen. Why? To gain full control of the world. The Pope sits on the altar of Chorazin. This is when he visited Jerusalem and Israel recently. Israel. The backdrop depicts Christ with an open book that reads, "Love your enemies, I will come soon." And what else do you see on his throne? An upside down cross. There's the Pope too with an upside down cross. Symbol of Lucifer's victory over Jesus. This is a sad state of affairs. And we looked at the teachings of Illuminism, we looked at the teachings of the Masonic Order, of the secret societies, and we saw that Lucifer was their god. They said so themselves. And what do we have to do? Come out of her, my people, that you not be partakers of her sins. I believe that we are on the threshold of history. I believe that the final events are unfolding. And I believe that we need have no fear because God said that He would give them the opportunity to show their true colors. The final apostasy against God will end in the greatest victory the universe has ever seen. And the kingdom of God will soon be ushered in. If you thought that this was long in the future, I have news for you. It is at the door. Jesus is coming soon. Thank you. We have been born.